The BBC. Poland. It is 4 minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It is Thursday, September 1st of 2022. I am your host, Rosanna Longobetter, in for Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we will hear about how school districts are struggling to take care of kids who don't qualify for free or reduced lunches. And this time on the Cannabis Report, longtime marijuana correspondent Leland Rocker brings us results from a psilocybin and cannabis survey and advice for making sense of that data. At the bottom of the hour, we will have the BBC News headlines, and then we have an extended Radio Nibbles, now called Kitchen Table Talk, a monthly hour-long show hosted by John Landorf of Radio Nibbles and Chef Daniel Asher. But this week, Sam Fuquia will be filling in. And then at 9:30, Shauna Sproles will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. And all that is coming up. But first, we will start with headlines with KGNU's Luis Licon.
California Representative and U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was in Boulder this Wednesday to visit NCAR and to talk to scientists and local leaders on new climate-related federal funding. Representative Joe Neguse, who attended the meeting, said at the event, "This is an impactful moment, I think, for our country, for a real opportunity to make meaningful progress in the fight against what is an existential threat of our time, which is climate change." The new Inflation Reduction Act commits $375 billion over a decade in clean energy production, scientific research, and mitigation for wildfires. Representative Pelosi and Colorado Representative John Neguse sat down with scientists along with President of the University Corporation for Atmospheric Research. Starting today, Coloradans are eligible for new hospital health care benefits. KGNU's Claire Purnell has more.
A new hospital billing law will go into effect today. House Bill 211198 will enable more accessibility to hospital care for Coloradans, particularly low to moderate income residents. Colorado's hospital discounted care law requires all Colorado hospitals to screen patients to see if they qualify for hospital discounted care, including those without official immigration documents and regardless of insurance status. Deputy Director of the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative says this law caps how much low and moderate income Coloradans can be charged, sets clear standards for affordable payment plans, requires hospitals to proactively screen uninsured patients for discounts, and more. This law helps ensure people can get the hospital care they need with more peace of mind. Patients who are eligible may receive income-adjusted discounts or affordable payment plans. Additionally, there will be more flexibility when sending hospital bills to collections. For KGNU, I'm Claire Purnell.
Demolition of the southwest part of Broomfield's Flatiron Crossing Mall will begin as early as 2023. Maserat Co. will transform this space that once housed Nordstrom into a mixed-use entertainment hub for housing and shopping. Developers say that they plan to transform the new development within 5 years, which they say will include a 24/7 active hub for entertainment. The city of Broomfield receives $14 million in tax revenue from the Flatiron Crossing and is expected to increase to $18.4 million. The city of Broomfield receives $14 million in tax revenue from the Flatiron Crossing and is expected to increase to $18.4 million once the project is completed. The city is also contributing $49.9 million to the project, which is set to cost more than $400 million. Developers say that the rest of the mall shops will remain open during the construction. Nonprofit veteran support groups have set a new opening date for the Village of Tiny Homes for Homeless Veterans in Longmont. Organizers from the Veterans Community Project, VCP, had planned to open the group of 26 tiny homes this year. Because of ongoing supply chain issues, they pushed the opening date to March of 2023. Miguel Valdez, the community engagement coordinator, said that the veterans who stay in our village will put in a lot of time and effort to get themselves ready for permanent housing. According to VCP, the community hopes that the new village will provide a space where veterans can interact with other people and create a safe home environment for veterans. Denver Police Chief Paul Passon will retire from the Denver Police Department in October after 3 decades with the department. Passon served as a Denver Police Chief for 4 years and was the department's second Latino chief. After spending 28 years rising through the ranks, Denver Mayor Hancock nominated Passon to serve as chief in 2018. In a press release, Passon said, "It's been an honor to serve the people of this city, and I couldn't be prouder to have done it alongside these dedicated women and men of the department who's answered the call to protect the residents of Denver, no matter the circumstance." Mayor Hancock has nominated Division Chief Ron Thomas to succeed Passon and will take over as acting chief on Tuesday. The Rocky Mountain National Parks will close for elk rooting season. Jimmy Searfoss from KGNU has more.
The Horseshoe Park, Upper Beaver Meadows, Moraine Park, Harbison Meadow, and Holsworth Meadow of the Rocky Mountain National Park will be closed from 5 p.m. to 10 a.m. beginning Thursday, and will stay that way through October 31st due to elk rutting season. Rutting season is when males begin looking for females. During the season, tens to hundreds of elk can gather in one area to find mates. This causes an increase in testosterone levels in males, who can reach over 1,000 pounds. This can cause the animals to become more aggressive. The nightly closures are to keep park visitors from disturbing elk and to avoid any problems that may arise during an interaction. For KGNU, this is Jimmy Searfoss.
In Boulder today, we're going to see a high of 92 and a low of 56 with a current temperature of 63 degrees. In Fort Collins, there's going to be a high of 95 and a low of 52 with a current temperature of 62. In Denver, we're going to see a high of 93 and a low of 61 with a current temperature of 67 degrees. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
You are listening to Morning Magazine on KGNU. I am your host, Rosanna Longobetter. The federal program that provided free school lunches for all students has now finished. School districts around the country and the country are trying to figure it out how to provide nutrition for kids who don't qualify for free or reduced lunches and whose families are struggling to pay. We recently reported on KGNU about a statewide ballot measure in Colorado that seeks to reduce tax deductions from the state's highest earners to fund free school lunch for all schools. Next, we will hear what's happening in Utah. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KZMU's Molly Marcello has more on what school officials in Moab are doing.
Nutrition advocates say the nationwide Free Lunch for All program helped address food insecurity and childhood hunger for millions during the first 2 years of the pandemic. But that's going away this school year.
Congress has decided that that is no longer a priority, so this year we're going back to the traditional model for school lunches, where we have free, reduced, or full-pay students.
Grand County Schools Director of Child Nutrition, Alicia Packard. The federal waivers providing free breakfast and lunch for all expired, and Congress chose not to renew them. Now families who are above certain federal income thresholds will again have to pay for their children's lunches. And experts say that can be tricky in Moab, where the federal income thresholds don't necessarily reflect the cost of living here. Jeremy Spaulding, Grand County Schools Community Coordinator.
I mean, we all know that people in this community still struggle to make ends meet. Wages have gone up considerably in town. The other side of it is that rents have also gone up considerably over the last few years.
According to the Utah Department of Workforce Services, the average monthly wage in Grand County has gone up by about $500 in the last 2 years. That could be enough to bump a family from qualifying for free and reduced lunch, but not enough to comfortably afford the meals. Packard says the schools
kind of need to fill in this gap of those families who have always qualified before but are now making $20, $21 an hour and don't qualify. The challenge is that they're not making enough to live comfortably. And so adding the extra expense of school lunch is still a considerable expense over the course of the year, especially not having had to budget for that for the last 2 years.
The Grand County School District has no plans to increase meal prices this year. They're the same as they were in 2020, about $2 to $3 per meal, but this cost can add up. At full price, school meals run about $450 to over $600 for one student for the entire school year.
We've already had one parent reach out to us. This person has 4 kids in school and doesn't qualify. And that burden is going to be about $2,000 over the year. I mean, that's a high cost.
Okay, you're going to get a breakfast here, and then you're going to go to that window and get your lunch in a box, okay?
In the early days of the pandemic, cafeteria workers boarded buses. They were dropping off free meals to children at different locations around town. That free program had a high participation rate here in Grand County. And when schools returned to in-person learning, they saw 70% of students continuing to eat free lunch. For Packard, this was an absolute dream.
I cannot tell you how big of a blessing having free lunch is. Free lunch is awesome. I think it really relieves pressure on our families. I mean, you have so much other things to think about, like, do we have shoes and pencils and all of this stuff for your kids? And to not have one more thing to think about, did I send my kid with lunch money today? Is my kid gonna eat lunch today? Like, to not have to think about that is huge. And to be able to fill that gap for the last 2 years has been absolutely phenomenal.
And Packard expects the return to the old way of doing things will be a bumpy transition. She's worried because she remembers what it was like before.
I've heard students in the past say, oh, well, my mom doesn't think I should eat lunch today because we can't afford it. And that's a really tough relationship to have to impose on students and their parents.
School district representatives say they will never turn away a student who is hungry. But Packard is concerned more families are going to experience these difficult dynamics. They first have to get used to paying for their child's meals again, and many may find out they no longer qualify for free and reduced lunch. This puts the schools in a tough position. The Grand County School District has set up a donation fund to pay for any student's outstanding meal balance. They're asking for community help to pay for kids' lunches.
It's kind of a scary place to be.
And Moab might not be alone here. There are plenty of communities where wages may have increased, but housing costs might be double or triple the national average. Here's Spalding again.
We know that districts in St. George have a similar sort of style to we do. Maybe in areas like Park City and those tourism-based districts, wages have gone up to reflect worker shortages within tourist areas. And so we're going to see the same problem in some areas of the state. And I think that we're going to see that across the West in areas that look like we do.
Before the pandemic, Spalding says about half of Grand County students qualified for free and reduced lunch. They expect much less to qualify now. But they need families to apply to know for sure. They're trying to gather data so they can help change the standard.
So if we encourage parents to sign up for this and we can show a difference from, you know, 2 years ago to now district-wide, we can show that the program isn't really working the way that it's set up. And eventually we could potentially petition the state to say this doesn't work for Utah and it doesn't work for our tourist community, where the wages have to be at a certain level for people to be able to even work here.
Eligibility for free and reduced lunch not only affects mealtime, it also gets students fee waivers for sports, discounts on college applications, and allows them to receive home internet access at a reduced rate. For Grand County, funding related to free and reduced lunch has paid for student Chromebooks and helped with grants that teachers and administrators apply for.
You wouldn't think that one thing would really have that kind of domino effect, but it does.
Nationwide, school food and nutrition advocates want to address this question of free and reduced lunch eligibility at the White House's September conference on food and hunger. They say this pandemic-related free meal experiment has done a lot for the country's students. Advocates will point to studies on free meals helping to increase school performance and reduce behavior problems. Spalding believes it also reduces stigma.
If everyone and their sister can eat free lunch at school, it's just what happens. There's no question of, oh, I can't afford it. There's no question of, oh, I have a negative balance on my account. There's none of that stuff. It's just you go to school and you get to eat. If you want to have hot lunch, you can have it. And so it reduces a difference between students, which is always a positive thing.
Grand County School District has staff to help families navigate the free and reduced lunch application. They say families who do not have traditional housing, so those living in an RV, hotel, or even staying with friends or relatives, can qualify for free meals regardless of income.
We go now to the Cannabis Report.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hanley Myers, and I'm here with Leland Rucker, longtime cannabis correspondent. Leland, thank you so much for being here.
Always good to be here.
Okay, so we're going to stay in the lane of psychedelics a little bit today as well, looking at a new study as well as some survey data that has been around for quite a while, actually.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. There's some new research results that seem to show that the psychedelic compound in magic mushrooms, which is also known as psilocybin, in combination with talk therapy, shows promise as a treatment for people with alcohol addiction. The study was published this month in JAMA Psychiatry, and they found that patients taking psilocybin had an 83% decline in heavy drinking, while those who took a placebo experienced a 51% decline. So that's a percentage difference, you know. And the 2019 National Survey on Drug Use and Health reported that nearly 15 million people ages 12 or older have alcohol use disorder. That's a lot of people. And more than 140,000 people die every year from alcohol-related causes. And that makes alcohol the third leading preventable cause of death in the United States. So this is serious stuff. You know, this is stuff that we want to learn about. But this study involved 93 patients. They took part in two medication sessions, and they were separated by 4 weeks. Each participant received either psilocybin or a placebo without being told which one they got. And during their sessions, they were, quote, encouraged to lie on a couch wearing eye shades and headphones, providing a standardized playlist of music, the authors write. And they also had 12 psychotherapy sessions, 4 before they received any medication, 4 between the treatments, and 4 after the 2 doses. And interestingly, after each session, nearly all the study subjects were able to successfully guess whether they had received psilocybin or the placebo. Isn't that interesting? They could figure out whether they got the real thing or not.
Not surprised with Aaron.
Yeah, and the author's right. Biased expectancies could have influenced results, so this issue remains a challenge for clinical research on psychedelics. It's something we got to remember, is that, you know, there are things that we have to look at when we look at studies and surveys. The study's lead author said that the next trial will include more than 200 participants. That's more than twice as many. And it'll test the efficacy of a single dose of psilocybin. It'll also use a different placebo, which is probably a good idea. They're going to use the vitamin niacin this time. And the FDA has approved the trial, and that'll be the largest one to study psilocybin-paired therapy for the treatment of alcohol use disorder. There was another study that's been released by the federal government. This is the one that's been around for a while. And it says that marijuana and hallucinogen use among young adults reached an all-time record last year after having leveled off during the first year of the coronavirus pandemic. And the findings are part of the government's annual survey of drug use among young Americans. And that also found that nicotine vaping and excessive alcohol consumption continued to climb in 2021 after a brief pause. And another worrying trend among young people ages 19 to 30 was mounting consumption of alcoholic beverages suffused with THC, which is the psychoactive ingredient in cannabis. And there's, you know, you can go to the store, there's all kinds of mixtures these days. It also found that cigarette smoking and opioid abuse among young adults dropped last year. And that's kind of got public health experts saying, well, that's a good thing, you know, because we've been talking about that for a long time, about cigarette use. And this survey was conducted from April to October 2021, so just last year. Now, the big question is, what can we draw from these studies? We see these things all the time. We see headlines all the time about studies. Well, first off, the first one we talked about was a study of 93 people. Now, you can say only 93 people or 93 people, but that's the number. And the update next year will have 200. And we'll get information. Definitely, we'll get information, but it's only information. There are no answers that are being given at this particular point in time. And the second one was a survey, and that means it relies on what people are telling you. And you always got to keep that in mind when you're reading headlines intended to lure you in. Well, how many people did it involve? Was it a survey? You know, was it a study? You know, think about these things when you see these headlines that promote, you know, cannabis will cure cancer, for instance. Well, it could, but that's not what you should be looking at, and that's not the kind of headlines that should be predominating. You should look at exactly what the study was. That study might have been of 9 people. It might have been of 3,000 people. Who knows?
It's nice now that at least we're seeing more of these studies as well. Like you're saying, it seems like there's at least interest in making that data pool larger, and people want to know and see a better study, a better conducted study seems to be another thing people are asking for in this area.
Definitely. I mean, any study is helpful. You know, the studies say that more people are using marijuana. Many more people are comfortable saying they use cannabis because it's increasingly legal in the United States. Similar thing is at play with psychedelics. Many states and cities and counties are re-examining their policies in the last couple of years. Most of the things you read about psychedelics are mental health related.
So remind us how this conversation about psychedelics comes into play here in Colorado in November with Initiative 58.
So the initiative in Colorado would also decriminalize the use, possession, and gifting of psilocybin statewide. But folks not aligned with initiative question the intentions of the measure, which is backed by New Approach. And if you look that up, that's a well-funded political action committee that helped legalize psilocybin in Oregon. And some of the people who are for psilocybin but not for the initiative, they believe the measure will lead to a corporate takeover of psychedelics that will make the substances more expensive and less accessible to people, and ultimately render treatment less equitable.
Because it'll only be accessible in a clinical setting, correct?
Correct. Correct. And going back to that initial one, that's what their setting was. They said that it was the setting that helped as well as the psilocybin. And so, should psychedelics be used only in a clinical setting? You know, the initiative on the Colorado ballot seems to advocate for that approach. I haven't read it myself. And even some psychedelic proponents are warning that the bill will give Big Pharma the major role. That's something that's been going around with cannabis and with psychedelics over the years. The one thing to remember is that these are just preliminary studies and surveys. They're not the complete answer. They're helpful, but they don't really answer the questions that we really need answered. They're helping. They're getting us along the way. I want to know whether psychedelics can actually help with mental health. I think everybody does. And we're moving in that direction. Can they be used to cure alcoholics? I'm really looking forward to the answer to that one.
Sure. We're taking the knowledge is power approach over here, and more data is better. So we'll continue to bring that to you on the first and third Thursdays of every month here on the Cannabis Report on KGNU. Leland, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers. And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine here on listener-supported community radio. I have been your host, Rosanna Longo-Better. Special thanks to Alexis Kenyon, Luis Licon, Jimmy Sirfos, Claire Purnell, Molly Marcello, Eleonor Hannah Lee Meyers, and Leland Rocker for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for the Kitchen Table Talk with Sam Fuqua and Daniel Asher. But first, we need to go to these news headlines from the BBC.
BBC News with Moira Alderson. Rafael Grossi, the head of the United Nations nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, has arrived with a team of inspectors at the Russian-occupied Zaporizhzhia power plant in Ukraine. The delegation's attempts to reach the complex were delayed because of shell fire. Mr. Grossi said his team was determined to inspect the facility. China's government has ordered more than 20 million people in the city of Chengdu to stay indoors following an outbreak of COVID. It's China's biggest lockdown since strict controls were imposed in Shanghai in March. Sri Lanka has been warned by the International Monetary Fund that its loan agreement is only the start of a long road ahead. The IMF has agreed to a four-year, $2.9 billion loan to deal with Sri Lanka's serious economic crisis. Southern Pakistan is expecting more flooding as a surge of water flows down the Indus River, adding to the devastation caused by recent extreme monsoon rains. A third of the country is submerged and more than 1,100 people have died in what the UN has called a climate catastrophe. The wife of the disgraced former Malaysian Prime Minister, Najib Razak, has been found guilty of corruption. Rosma Mansour was sentenced to 10 years in jail for accepting a bribe. Retail prices in Turkey's biggest city, Istanbul, are rising at an annual inflation rate of 99.9%, according to month-on-month figures from the city's Chamber of Commerce. Analysts say government efforts to tackle the crisis risk worsening the situation. And a stowaway squirrel has landed up unexpectedly in Scotland after a three-week journey on a ship from India. The palm squirrel, nicknamed Zippy because of his speedy manoeuvres, is being cared for by an animal charity. It's looking for a British zoo that can give him a home among fellow three-striped palm squirrels. That's the latest BBC News.
Support comes from the JLF Colorado, presented by Teamworks Arts, September 17th through September 18th at the Boulder Public Library. The Literature Festival brings leading authors from around the world to host live discussions of today's most important topics. JLF Colorado celebrates diversity, words, and ideas as authors in the community engage in conversation about the critical issues of our times. More information at jlflitfest.org/Colorado.
Oh, the big band sounds of Cab Calloway getting us going this morning. That means, of course, it's time for Radio Nibbles, the monthly extended edition we call Kitchen Table. John Lendorf is traveling, so you have me, Sam Fuqua, operating the board, and happy to be here with John's co-host, Daniel Asher, the chef and owner of River and Woods and Ashkara. Dan, it's great to see you again.
Great to see you. So happy to be here, and excited to rock out the new edition of Kitchen Table Talk.
All right. Two in-studio guests. Great that we are having people back in the studios now, and good to see some smiling faces here to talk about important issues related to what we eat.
Yes.
What we grow.
Food and community, indeed, two critical experiences of the human condition. And we're going to dive into some of those ideas. Thanks for joining us, Lisa and Ian. Lisa, you want to say hello to our listeners and talk a little bit about you?
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Daniel.
Yeah.
Can you hear me okay?
You're right.
Okay, there we go. This is really, really fun. Thanks for inviting me, Daniel.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, you bet. Daniel and I share, you know, a love and a passion for food, especially well-grown food and local food from farmers, and we've shared that over the years. I live here in near Boulder, Colorado, but I was born and raised in a little town in Iowa, and that was where I really got my feet wet in being much more involved in like how the food ends up on our plate. And so that was kind of the start of my, you know, journey as a